Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I'm your host, Christopher Hart. Today is an episode that I have been trying to make happen for a year, for this entire 2018. I have known David Allardyce and Daniel Story for a couple years now. They've been a big part of the Whiskey Social, the festival that I host locally, as well as the whiskey scene. I mean, she's the Southeast District Manager for the brand, and David Allardyce basically handles the is the Bible Belt going north to south? Is it basically Texas to whatever's above Texas? So he handles that middle tornado alley, you know, Chicago, Texas, Oklahoma. He's from Scotland. He's a DJ. He also goes by DJ Dave Paradise. He's phenomenal. I've been trying to get him on the show forever. So I'm a big fan of the brand. This brand is one of the brands that holds a place in my heart in regards to my wife. I've talked to you all about the Balvenie marriage bottle that I have, but Glenfiddich 18 was one of the first scotches I've had that basically tasted like Christmas. It was everything I wanted and didn't know that scotch could taste like, that was not peated. So Glenfiddich has made a massive impression in our house. Huge fan of the brand, and they cover everything from the $35 range to the sky's the limit. So I was excited to have them on. They've got a new bottle out called Fire and Cane. Fire and Cane is part of their experimental series, and it is lightly peated, finished in rum barrels, and out of this world delicious. Couple things. The Whiskey Social tickets are on sale now. It's set for March 30th. We are now, I guess, 3 months away, something like that. A little more than three months away. And you can find those tickets at HoustonWhiskeySocial.com. It's also on Facebook, The Houston Whiskey Social. This event is our fourth event. We see something like 400 whiskeys a year, and it's just it's incredible. So definitely check it out at HoustonWhiskeySocial.com or Facebook and get your tickets while you can at Eventbrite. Without further ado, Daniel Story and David Allardyce with Glenfiddich. Cheers. Thank you so much for being here. We're definitely live. We're definitely recording.
Thanks for having us.
I'm excited.
Good to be here in Houston, H-Town. Yeah. I was only here a few days ago.
Yeah, I follow your social media presence. You seem to not stop. You and Wingo both seems to just do you sleep or
sleep.
How are you not grumpy all the time?
I sleep lots. I was actually talking to someone about this last night. It says, yeah, I usually get 9 hours of sleep. That's my optimum amount.
A day?
A week.
Not every day, but that when I get the 9 hours, I feel like I wake up rested.
Oh.
But it doesn't happen. Like last night I got 2.5.
Oh, that's rough.
What time was your flight?
So we needed the lights to light up my soul. I'm a little bit tired from last night. Yeah, we had a bar crawl last night in Austin, and then we finished up by going to see Gary Clark Jr.
Okay.
Are you familiar?
I'm very familiar with the greatness that is Gary Clark Jr.
I was not. And,
he's amazing.
It was tremendous.
Yeah.
I don't go to see a lot of bands. I'm more into...
And you listen to him in Austin, which is like the perfect...
It was really cool.
The perfect atmosphere for a Gary Clark Junior concert.
Yeah, it was pretty mind blowing. But yeah, it was a late night. Another late night.
What were y'all sipping on?
What were we sipping on?
We
actually went through a couple places, had flights. We did it was a flight with 14 Fire and Cane Winter Storm. We were sipping highballs.
What?
You know?
Well, let's definitely I wanna jump on Fire and Cane. I know the last time we had
Kelsey and Charlotte.
Right, but every time I say her name, I can't help but try to say it with a Scottish accent because McKechnie sounds. So, but you guys talked about Fistful of Bourbon. We briefly, for a moment, talked about Fire and Cane, and I think later that day was the launch that we did locally, or the next day.
It was a couple weeks later we did the actual like market launch. We did the press launch.
Okay.
That night.
Okay, I see. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the press launch, but it has been such an overwhelmingly positive, let's try that again, an overwhelmingly well-received release. And it's, you're talking about a sub-50 single malt scotch that's got, you know, if you're a peat fan at all, I mean, peat, and then of course that sweetness from the rum barrels. I know about it, but tell me a little bit about the Fire and Cane.
Yeah, I mean, the elevator pitch is that it's a slightly peated Glenfiddich finished in rum casks for 4 months. That's the very broad strokes description of it. Great sound.
I remember that from last time.
Mm-hmm. You put it right in the mic.
Got to capture that. This was beautifully done.
I've got to be careful because I have a heavy pour.
Just go easy on us. Still.
You flew in this morning?
I did, yes. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I was trying to get the bus. I was trying to get the Vaughan Lane. That's my new favorite way to get around Texas.
Awesome.
What's it called?
Vaughan Lane.
Is that
it's like an executive type 5-star luxury bus service.
I didn't know if we had that.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Vaughan Lane.
Vaughan Lane, one word. And it goes, you can get from Houston to Dallas or Austin.
That's a fun
I don't know if you can go to San Antonio from Houston.
You can.
Mm-hmm. You've done it.
They haven't got Austin from San Antonio yet because that's super short, but great service.
Yeah. No 3-hour bus ride?
Yeah, and it beats, you know, you don't have any of the nonsense with the airports and, you know.
Free Wi-Fi so you can work, do some expenses.
Yeah, or you can work or you can sleep if you only got 2 hours of sleep last night. Yeah, the Vaughan Lane wasn't going to get me here in time, so we got a little flight. A little hop from Austin, yeah.
That's got to be rough.
Yep, so Fire and Kane, you're sipping it. My glass is empty. Thanks a lot.
She said she had to go live.
I actually told her earlier. I was like,
yeah, I was just saying. I was like,
I'm not really excited about drinking right now.
You're like, I don't want Scotch to touch my lips.
You've got to... So I, you know, this hobby / job thing that has definitely increased the amount I've consumed before bed. Lots of water and ibuprofen, and I feel pretty sprightly. I don't know how great that is on your liver and or stomach, but
yeah,
rejuvenates itself.
But I usually am feeling pretty okay to drink, and I've done a lot of these like 10 a.m. shows where we have to drink at 10 a.m. We got two today, so Will Schragis will be here. Which you guys won't see till next week, but it's this, you just got to find a way to like keep the gears turning.
We'll find a way.
Keep them oiled.
Find a way.
Well, cheers.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having us.
So it's lightly peated. The breakdown of how we actually put this together, or how Brian and the team put it together, is taking some heavily peated malt, running that through our stills, running through that through production for about a week. We do that typically every year, once a year. And we collect that spirit. We put it into casks.
Affectionately known as?
New Make Spirit.
I was going to say Peat Week, right? Is that not the same?
No, we don't. Balvenie has a thing called Peat Week.
Right, the expression's called Peat Week.
Similar.
But isn't it a reference to that week, that 1 week a year where you guys run peated distillate?
We don't really refer to it specifically as that, but yes, I guess you could say that.
Comes from the same week.
It's something that we did since, and I just found this out recently. I think Ian Miller used to run a distillery, and I think it was Ian that put that practice in at Glenfiddich, where he says, "Let's see what happens if we actually run peated malt through the production process." So, the barley is peated about 50 to 60 parts per million at the start of the process, and then by the time we get through the stills after second distillation, it's down to around about, I think it's around about 9 or 10.
It's really light.
And then what we do is we actually blend 60% of the peated malt with traditional unpeated Glenfiddich. So we bring that down even further down to
even
about
lower.
Five or six parts per million. It's got a little on the nose, but it really comes out when you...
On the palate.
On the finish, yeah.
Yeah, it was very well received. I know a few people... I really, you know, with the new era of no age stated whiskeys, there's been a big push, and I'm going to blow a little smoke up your bums for now, but Glenfiddich specifically, you guys have been on this trend of making very approachable, and I say introductory, not in the sense that it is a rookie expression, but that it is for ever since the 14 came out.
Right.
Someone says, I'm a bourbon drinker, I want a single malt, I always say Glenfiddich. 14 Bourbon Barrel Reserve. You guys are on this trend of like very approachable, very affordable, and then of course diverse. The entire line from the IPA cask. The is it called the XX or the 20? I
say Project 20.
It says Project XX, but it actually stands for 20.
Right,
but
I knew it stood
for 20.
They didn't want
to put 20 on there, so they didn't want people to think it was a 20-year statement.
Yep.
Wade, if you're listening, there's those people who have issues with the deceptive numbers. that great idea. So right. Anyways, my point is that the entire series right now, except for the 21, is, you know what, $45? I mean, I think the Fire and Canes, the least expensive I've seen so far. I was really surprised at how inexpensive it is, and it's awesome. Right. I mean, lightly peated, so if you like Lafroy, but it's a little too intense.
Too much,
This is a great dram. I'm a huge fan of it.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think the innovation line did a really good job of recruiting new drinkers, people that are like, oh, I don't like scotch because they think the traditional scotch is really peaty. I think this did a really good job of pulling those IPA drinkers in and those people that are looking for something new.
Well, and even the design, like with Fire and Cane and the artwork done with the new series, reminds me 100% of David Allardyce. I mean, the look of the.
Well, it's the shoes that I bought.
It's the high tops.
Everybody saw those.
The graphics remind me of your image. You know, the DJ Paradise. I mean, just the for those who don't know, David Allardyce is also a musician, a creator of music, and.
I wish I had Trevor's.
So, anyways, very good.
It is. This is number 4 in experimental series. We started off with the IPA cask, which was a bourbon cask aged Glenfiddich, finished in IPA casks. That was a partnership that we created with a local brewery in Scotland. So it was kind of an interesting. It was truly an experiment. We took a long time to get to the final product. A lot of testing. But they got there or something that was a little bit more on the mellow side, and it only had that. It's kind of similar for me with the Fine Cane, where the smoke just comes through at the very end. The IPA, the sort of multi-beer quality, comes through at the end on the IPA cask. Number 2, we decided to do something, a collaboration with all the brand ambassadors. So Project 20 was 20 brand ambassadors that were led into warehouse number 2, and we were then to pick 6 casks each. We put our initials on each cask. We then got samples of each cast the next day.
Were you part of this?
Yeah, I was part of that.
Oh, that's awesome.
There's thumbprints on there.
This was...
Is it really his thumbprint? Mm-hmm. That's his thumbprint?
Well, isn't it all...
It's an amalgamation. We all gave our thumbprints. Oh, I see. We all gave our tasting notes and everything. So we selected 6 casks each.
Wait, when you did this, did you know what y'all were going to do with them?
No, we didn't know. We thought...
Kinsman, right?
Yeah, Brian Kinsman is the malt master, and he was with us through this process, this project. We actually thought that we were just going to get some bottles for sampling for our own events, you know. And then somewhere along the lines, once we selected all these casks, they decided this was going to be a release. And it came out, and you had whiskies right the way through from bourbon casks, sherry casks, and you had there was actually one port cask, which Beth up in Canada, she picked the port pipe, the famous port pipe. And it was just a marriage of those different barrels selected from the different brand ambassadors from all around the world. So you had all different types of palettes that came together to put this in. And because it was by us, you know, we wanted it to be a little bit higher strength because we understand the audience that we get in front of quite often like a little bit higher strength. Also, we asked that it would be non-chill filtered, which, you know, I'm sure most people that listen to this show are familiar with that term. But typically chill filtration is something that is done across the board. But it supposedly can remove a little bit of the oily character.
The mouthfeel.
Yeah, a little bit of that mouthfeel can go with that. But you know, 99.9% of whiskies go through that process. It's pretty rare that you get whiskies that are non-chill filtered these days. And coming from Scotland.
Oh, 100%. I mean, there's 3 things I always tell people on this show that I borrowed from Ralphie for anyone who's watched Ralphie's reviews on YouTube.
He was in Whiskey Sponge recently. Did you see it?
No. What's Whiskey Sponge?
Oh, excellent. I'm glad we've uncovered this here.
Yeah.
It's a tremendous blog. I don't actually know the guys who do it. They keep themselves fairly low profile in terms of, you know, revealing their...
They're like the WikiLeaks of the whiskey world?
That's
could be, yeah.
Good way to say it.
And
Ralphie was in there?
Ralphie's in the most recent post.
And what about?
You'll have to go and check it
out. Oh, that kills me.
It's about a really well-known Scotch whiskey brand and their new marketing campaign.
Okay, all right. This is going to kill me. I know we've got a break coming up. I'll check it out on our break. But
it's very entertaining.
So my point with Ralphie was that he had always three indicators that before you ever taste a spirit is a sign of a little bit extra effort put into what goes in the bottle, and that non-chill filtered, a bump in proof from 80 proof. Anytime you see a brand that even goes to 43%, they're obviously trying to get the right flavor into the bottle as opposed to just taking the maximum profits and cutting it down to 80 proof standard without any care as to what it tastes like. And then the other thing is no added color, which it's not necessarily a bad thing. I have no issue with caramel coloring being added, but non-chill filtered, bump and proof. So he's very like dogmatic about his feelings on things. Yeah. And it was great for me when I first got into spirits because I got to learn a lot about it. But now I'm afraid you're going to tell me he got Neil deGrasse Tyson or something. And I'm going to go look in the post and find out what happened. But
yeah, it wasn't that bad.
Whiskey Sponge.
Whiskey Sponge, yeah. It's a blog and a newsletter that comes out
interesting
monthly almost.
Yeah. What barrel did you pick out of the Project 20?
It was a bourbon cask. Funny story about that, actually. Out of the six casks that I had in front of me, the six samples, I picked two as my favorites. The first one being a sherry cask. It was quite a bit older than the bourbon cask I chose. The bourbon cask was actually really young. And Brian comes round. I said, he was basically nosing everyone's top pick, and he came round to mine, and he picked up the first glass.
Did you feel like your job was on the line?
I felt like I was potentially about to be ridiculed by the whole room.
Yeah, I would imagine if the boss's boss is going through and saying what you like, and if you picked out something horrible, he'd be like, okay, this guy cannot represent us.
It was a tremendous learning experience because he picks up this cask, this sherry cask, and he barely even puts it to his nose, and he's like, I said, that's not a good face. I think it's burnt. I'm getting burnt notes. I'm like, guessing burnt's not good in this occasion. So we put that to the side, and I reassessed it, and I was like, I started to see what he was talking about. But to me, it was I thought it was interesting.
Sure.
So we moved on to the bourbon cask, and it was really interesting to me just to see how a very, very young whiskey can be so flavorful. And we've also sampled very, very old whiskies that are not so great.
Yeah.
So it was more of a just kind of a novelty for me that it was such a young whiskey, but it was so good.
Sure.
And I thought, that's going to be my pick.
That's one of the things I have always enjoyed going through. I think if you kind of are raised in your whiskey experience only drinking, let's say, I'm just going to throw a brand out there, Early Times, you know, my dad only drank Jim Beam White Label, whatever. I think it really limits your comfort zone. It's like food. I want to try sushi, the full spectrum of sushi, and you know, Tex-Mex is great. And going through and being able to enjoy everything from sherry, that's what I think scotch is more dynamic than bourbon. Bourbon almost always carries the same classic notes, but scotch, you can go full spectrum of sherry to peat to just that ex-bourbon where it's kind of like just that honeyed sweetness that the Highlands are known for. It's like when you first learn to drive, you should learn to drive stick. I think you should start with scotch and then maybe move over to bourbon as opposed to the other way around. But that's just my thoughts on it.
I don't disagree.
Oh, it smells great. You got it.
Good job. That was a little different. There's some grit to it.
A little extra.
It sounded like a little remix. Okay. Quirk remix.
Paradise. I could be your side DJ.
Let's sample that. We'll make it a hit.
Actually, speaking of sampling it, I thought about putting you on the spot on air and helping me do our new intro song to the show.
Would love to. I come dressed like this for nothing.
I mean, you don't have to do it right this moment, but like we've got like an opening banjo type thing.
Yeah.
And I've never been 100% sold on it. And then I saw someone online saying that all these whiskey podcasts all use like stereotypical banjo music. And I was like, oh, shit. So we can say shit still, right? What we'll do is, let me know. Just like a little, what is it, like 10 seconds? How long is our intro?
It's a little shorter than that. Yeah.
I mean, just like a little, it's a little cut from the introduction to the beginning of this conversation where we talk about high tops and sleeping.
Love it.
I feel like your wheels are turning.
My wheels are always turning, Daniel, when I'm with you.
That honeyed sweetness is incredible. That's really, what's the proof on that?
47.
I don't remember it being that high.
Percent.
I'm a fan. Plus, it's got the look and feel of these bottles are incredible.
yeah, they did a nice job on the packaging. But yeah, Project 20 was number two. It's available in the US. It's available in a lot of countries. But it's possibly going to stay around. We're not quite sure yet.
Trying to recreate it? Like, is there going to be like a remix edition and then it'll be like another six barrels?
The initial 20 barrels were used to make the blueprint for it.
Okay.
So the same way that any distillery will have a blueprint for their
12.
Any part of their range, because, you know, the casks are non-repeatable. They're always slightly different. So same with this. We set the blueprint.
As long as they're not burnt, I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, we'll be good with that. And then, we came out with number three, which was a limited edition, Winterstorm.
Yeah, and that was recently reintroduced to the market, I think.
Batch number two.
Because I couldn't get my hands, and I was really not fuming, but very sad that
you
I
can hold it for
I,
now.
I own three bottles now, so it's when it came out again, I jumped all over it. When it first got here, it seemed to have come and gone before I even saw it was here. So
yeah, it went really quickly. But I've noticed it on a few shelves, so it's still out there. I bought this one yesterday.
First bottle I got was from Talamantes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He had an extra bottle or something, and I was like, dude, I've been dying to get my hands on this, and he hooked me up. Thank you, Nick.
Yeah, Tamales is a good guy.
Is that what you call him?
Tamales, yeah. There's a couple different ones.
We'll talk about names that don't rhyme with his last name.
Yeah. We'll talk about that off air.
Yeah, ice wine is not something I'm super familiar with, but I was in Canada recently, purchased a few bottles from the Peller Estates, which is who we partnered with for this particular one. And we ended up taking, I think we got, oops, losing some bits here.
Light down.
I think we got six casks in order to do the finishing for the Winterstorm. Well, I think we got more than six casks, but that was like the initial.
Sure.
And basically what we did was we aged 21 years in bourbon casks, and then we put it into the ice wine cask for about 4 or 5 months.
Do you know if they were first fill?
Not specified. So probably a combination of first and second. The 19-year-old, which is back, the bottle on the end there.
I'm really glad you brought that back, by the way.
That's specifically first fill.
Specifically.
Well, never really went away. It went to Global Travel Retail,
yeah.
And then we brought it back.
Yeah, and it's going to be phased out, but there's a small batch of it coming back to the US. I think it just landed recently. So the 19-year-old, perfect timing for Christmas or the holidays.
And the box is beautiful.
So that's a first fill. But nothing else that is on the table is specifically, exclusively first fill.
It's blended to profile, right? That would be the way to put that. Mm, this is fantastic. I haven't had Project 20 in quite some time, except when it first came out. And I don't remember it being so the high proof. I mean, just really, it's very sweet. I'm a huge fan.
Yep. Did a great job with that.
Again, it was like $50. I mean, the price is ridiculously cheap.
What did y'all do with the rest of the barrels? Like, cause didn't you each pick six?
Yeah, we basically got samples of each.
Oh, cool.
That's all that happened, basically. We weren't allowed to pick the same cast as anyone else. So we got the samples, and then that was that. We didn't get to go home with the casks or anything.
Have you, and I know this is so cheesy and stupid, and I'm sure it's been recommended, but have you ever thought about taking a couple of barrels and making a custom setup for your DJ remixing? What would be the irritating way to say that?
We actually we did a gig at the distillery. I think it was 2 years ago now. Pretty sure we're the first people to ever do a gig at the Glenfiddich Distillery, or probably any Scotch whiskey distillery. But
when you say gig, you were like DJing.
Yeah, Jez is our South African ambassador, so he DJs too, similar style of music. And we got Struan to help us set it up. Struan's a global ambassador now. And we got three empty barrels.
Yeah.
We had all the decks set up on them outside the patio right by one of the warehouses at the distillery. And we played a little set. We had a barbecue. It was amazing.
That sounds amazing.
Barbecue in Scotland.
We had a barbecue. It was raining.
It's probably
it actually was raining, but we had a barbecue. We had tarps.
You always talk about the rain, but every time I've gone to Scotland, it's always been beautiful, and it's sunny, gorgeous. And they're like, you'll never get a better day than this.
Sunshine just follows her around.
Oh. I actually...
See, this is what happens when you live with Matthias.
Yeah, just compliments all the time.
I went... I've only been during the winter, and it was just the most gloomy. We took the Harry Potter train and, you know, through, was it Fort William or something? And basically on the western side of Scotland, there's this gorgeous train that goes over the...
Is it really called the Harry Potter train?
No, it's called, it's got a name for it, but if you're a fan of the Harry Potter films, the train that they took, the Hogwarts Express, specifically drove through the hillside of Scotland, and it's, I want to say the Glenfiddich Viaduct, but it's not. There's a viaduct. Basically, it's like this gorgeous bridge that goes to the hillside of Scotland, and it's just a short run from like Loch Ness to Fort William. And I'm probably horribly butchering this, but the imagery, the scenery you see from the film is from this part in Scotland. So, of course, we had to ride the train. And
Yeah. We
went and we got like the box car and we took some chocolates with us. And my wife's a huge Harry Potter fan. And I am too, but not to the extent that I needed to go to a train. But but it was just, it was the fall and it was just, everything was brown and cold. And Scotland's the only place I've been to where it's, my ears are constantly popping because the hill country, or not the hill country, the highlands are just up. You heard that? Just up and down all over the place. So you just, you know.
Yeah. Did you get to visit the distillery?
So we visited the Glenfiddich Distillery, which is by far the most modernized, like really great looking aesthetic. You know, it's, you go to Bardstown in Kentucky and it's an old textile factory. Like it's Glenfiddich's a gorgeous, we tried to go to Balvenie or Balvenie, but it was... by appointment only, and we didn't know that. So we're like literally looking in the gift shop window trying to get in, but we found out later that it was by appointment only, but we didn't get to give the whole thing. But I did get a hand-filled bottle from the gift shop, and first time I saw the Glenfiddich 40 was in the gift shop. And I've since had it at Federal.
Yep,
back 40 when year. Peter was there.
Yeah.
Good old Peter. I thought about having him on when you were here today.
I was out. We should have got him on. I was out with him on Sunday.
He'll be there tonight.
Cool.
Yeah.
But. Yeah. Well, we're going to be going visiting a few bars tonight. So this is a nice little warm-up for us. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fantastic. Every time I try that, we're trying to milk it because it's one of those things that you're not going to find it every day like you can the other stuff. Which, by the way, are you guys going to stop the series at one point, or is this an indefinite series?
Yeah, the experimental series is an ongoing thing. It's the only one that we've made so far that is not ongoing is the Winter Storm, and that's just down to the nature of the difficulty of getting those casks from the ice wine producers. We decided that was a one and done.
Sure.
Fire and Cane number 4, and then there will be something new coming out next year.
You can't tell me?
I genuinely don't know.
You know. I see.
I do know something that's coming out. I obviously can't talk about it, but I do know one product that's coming out. But there will be an additional experimental coming out next year.
I'm checking the Cola website while you talk.
Yeah.
What is it?
The label approval website.
Oh.
I had sneaky. Which, by the way, I looked up the Ralphie thing. It's very bizarre. I encourage you to check it out. Go to Ralphie's YouTube page. Is that my phone or yours?
Oh, I hope it's not mine.
Yeah, we've had some issues with people finding labels before the news is out.
Yeah, I'm sure you can't talk about it if there is something on here, but I'll know.
It won't be.
You'll see that I know, but you won't
know. It won't
be
there because it's not that far along yet.
Yeah, I was like, when Fistful was coming out, people were finding the label. I was like, dang.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Good news travels fast.
People are thirsty for
thirsty
for the breaking news.
People want to know. People want to know. We had Glenfiddich, Glenmorangie, Brendan McCarron, if you've ever met him. He is all personality. I mean, crazy personality. We actually got into a bit of controversy. The great thing about doing the show pre-recorded is anything can be removed, so... if something is said that probably shouldn't make it to there. So Brendan, being the great man that he is, that can't be right.
Let me see. I want to see what you...
No. Okay, but so...
How'd you get that so quickly?
It's in my favorites. So for those who can't see, so that says Snow Phoenix, but if you look here, that CA means that someone re-imported it to put into a restaurant in California. But that one there,
Experiment one.
Yeah, well, I didn't say it. You did.
Just one.
Experiment what? It
says experiment one.
Which was the IPA?
No. Okay. All right. All right. You win this one. I'll let you guys know in a few months. What is this?
This is new, but it's not new.
Okay, hold on. I've never actually had it. I had the Madeira.
Was it the Red Box? I actually just found a bottle of that in, where was I? Either I think it was Grand Caymans or Belize or somewhere. And I walked in and there was
one of these far off places that just
happened to visit on a Tuesday.
Just picking up.
It actually was a Tuesday. Funny you say that. And I found a bottle of
Definitely not
Madeira.
Stalking you. The Madeira. Yeah, that one I've had. Big fan. And this is the Blue Box, right? The
Ex
bourbon.
It's first fill bourbon casks the whole way. There's no fancy finishes. There's nothing really super unusual about it. It just delivers a really good taste. It's got a really nice mouthfeel. It's not non-chill filtered. It's
19 years and it's
43%.
Like 120 bucks. I mean, it's a price, give or take.
It's going to be what?
I would say more like 140.
All right. Fred, why is it Fred Fowler calling me? Show?
Good collector's item though. Because this one is only back for a short time and then it's getting discontinued.
Yeah, beautiful bottle.
Yeah, well, it's hard to keep up. I mean, the fervor and demand now for whiskey is so extraordinarily high that trying to put out 21-year-old and 19-year-old whiskeys on a regular basis is next to impossible. So, when I see these things, cheers. I'm just happy to get my hands on it. Oh, absolutely.
I'm glad we finally got to come on.
Well, see, the last time I sat down with Allardyce was like 2 years ago at Butcher's.
It can't be that long.
Well, I mean, he was at the social DJing, which that was such a maddening. We tried something different by doing a spread out event, multiple floors, and we knew that it was either going to be a great idea.
That was before it was at the Citadel, correct?
Correct, yeah. We thought it was going to either be a great idea or a horrible idea. And it was so much work that by the time the end of the night came, we were too tired for an after party, but I was still happy to like sit there and the graphics and the imagery.
Awesome venue.
I mean, the venue was great. We just immediately outgrew it.
Where was it?
It was called HSR Event Center, and we did 740 people, and they said they've done events with 1,000 people, but once you throw in tables and stuff, it became totally packed.
Right.
And we were so exhausted by the end of the night. It was just, dude, my feet were killing me. So the Citadel this year, obviously, all in one room, which is a little bit more traditional for these whiskey events, two rooms. But that venue had this just awesome, like, you weren't at it, I don't think.
You like to plan these things not around my schedule. I've had a wedding,
I apologize. If you'll show me your schedule moving forward,
we'll just compare calendars. I think I was at a wedding both times, actually.
I think I recall you apologizing because you were at a wedding, but they had floor to ceiling projector screens that covered three walls of the four of a room. So you had Allardyce center stage and just these crazy graphics going, kind of wrapping around you.
I remember seeing your like Instagram posts and stuff.
I mean, I thought it was fantastic as far as aesthetically and visually.
Oh, it was, yeah.
I heard really, really good things.
And your guy that does the audio.
Ian.
No. Is it, what's the name of the company? I thought it was like.
Aura Systems.
I think Miguel. So. Miguel, yes. He's awesome.
Great. Yeah, he's really good.
He was incredible. And I guess him and his wife or partner just came in, came out. I mean,
I've worked with those guys. I've worked with Miguel specifically.
Medina, right? Medina, yeah.
Yeah, Miguel Medina, Aura Systems.
Good with names,
really, really good stuff. I mean, he's helped me out with gigs in Dallas. Obviously, Houston, he's based here. But yeah, we did one recently. We did a thing called Glenfiddich Cribs.
Oh.
Did you see that one?
No. Where can I see it, first of all, on your social media?
Actually, I haven't done a recap on that one yet. I've got so much footage from the last few months and I haven't sat down and edited it all, but Dallas Cribs was an idea I had just to kind of give it a slightly different environment for us to get people in the industry together.
Sure.
And versus just going on a bar crawl and being in the domain that we're always in, I said, well, let's get an Airbnb, something really plush.
And, so you all Airbnb'd the crib.
I Airbnb'd the crib and, you know, filled up the fridge with beer, Topo Chico.
A lot of questions.
I had the whole Glenfiddich range from 12 up to 26-year-old, including all the experimentals.
Another rum cask finish.
You know, snacks and everything and cigars. And just, it was a house party. Right. But it was a small house party. It wasn't like crazy.
And it was, yeah, and obviously.
20 people. We started off at a bar. We had lunch. We all went over to the house. And we just hung out. And people were then able to taste the whiskies at their own pace, ask questions, hang out. It was super informal. There was no presentation. There was nothing, you know. It didn't feel like it was a branded thing.
Sure.
Yeah. It was just super, you know, a lot of fun. So that was episode one was Dallas. Yeah. We got to do it in Houston.
I don't know if I was renting out my really nice house when I saw David Allardyce say, I want to rent your house. I don't know if I would.
Fun fact, by the way, the guys who rented the house to me.
Regret it.
Young guys. No. They came back the next day solid and they joke. Were they sent me reviews on Airbnb saying like, they couldn't believe how clean the place was when they came back. And they actually had an event in Dallas about 3 weeks later. And I texted the guys the flyer, you know, just as a courtesy. It's like, and they came out.
Yeah.
My Airbnb host came out to our party.
Anytime I go to Kentucky, I always, it's a business trip. And I'll approach.
I like how you air quote.
Yeah, I mean, it's business, but we're going to pick out barrels of bourbon and whatever. And I always approach the Airbnb host, always Airbnb. Airbnb is incredible, especially in Kentucky. And Scotland. When we did Scotland, we stayed on Isla and we rented a cottage.
It was cool.
And it was way better than staying in a hotel and cheaper. Anyway, so I always tell them like, hey, we're coming to buy bourbon. It's work related. There's six of us. We're all, it's not a party, I promise. Like there's always like this thing where you're trying to explain.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine when you approach them.
Sales pitch.
Yeah. Did you say, hey, I'm with
what was your elevator pitch?
Well, the only thing I didn't tell them was that I was going to have the DJ set up there. Mm. I didn't tell them that.
Was it very close to like other houses?
No, it was freestanding on the corner.
That's good.
But no, I told the guys, it says I'm having about 20 people over. We're doing a little kind of a thank you to people in the industry. We're going to taste all the whiskies. Some of this whiskey may be left behind for you guys. But no, they were fine. And like I said, I just made sure that the guest that had stayed there before me had punched a hole in the bathroom wall. So he showed me that. And he's like, well, this was the last group. I says, don't worry. We won't be punching any holes in any of your walls.
Yeah, well, and if everyone there is industry related, everyone's got like an obligation to not be a complete
100%.
Jerk.
And also it was handpicked. So, you know, we invited people on a personal invitation basis. Sure. It wasn't a massive blast.
Right. So it had to be kind of gauged only. Who it was.
Yeah.
It was going to be there.
How many people did it hold?
We had probably about 25 people at the most.
It's a solid
point,
crowd.
But for the most part, it was probably between 15 and 20 people.
Did they all stay the night, or was it like a come and go thing?
I was the only one that stayed.
That's the whole house to yourself.
Because what we did was we decided to go for a drink. You know, kind of take everyone away from it.
Sure. Yeah.
And then a few people came back.
I see.
But
that's smart.
It was cool. I was actually given. You know, some of the people was, you know, kind of showing them how to DJ and stuff like that. It was fun. There was one of my friends there, Kia, who actually does know how to DJ on turntables, but she hadn't used the equipment that we had, the CDJs. So we're doing a little DJ tutorial. it was fun. Something different. You know, people that are in the industry, they get so swamped with events and parties and whatnot, and it's good to try and give something a little bit different. Yeah.
They also get kind of set in the routine of these things. The account events where it's very like standard and you do like 50 of them a year. It's nice to try something different and something new. And the similar idea, like when we actually got the I call it this wasn't y'all's official calling of this, but we got the consumer launch of the IPA cask. We when it first got here, most brands do like an actual industry only launch first, and we did an event centered around that, partnered with a local IPA beer and did the whole thing. And so we do try to do things a little. I like the idea, and I think you really could set a trend of like doing like events at, because it happens all the time with networking events,
right,
where they do an Airbnb and those are garbage anyways, but but doing it with a Scotch brand would, I mean, especially in the Heights area, or not that, the Heights or River Oaks.
Yeah. I was just thinking of the biggest house.
It's all about who you invite to come. You need the right people to make that work. And also, it's kind of, Michael, who's the director for the brand, had expressed interest in the program and suggested that maybe we roll it out or at least suggest it to the rest of the Glenfiddich team. But I think that's a comfort level that I had with throwing that kind of party. That's a very intimate setting.
Sure.
You know, you've got this house, you're kind of in charge of it.
And it's only a handful of people.
And so I don't think it's for everyone, but yeah. I especially enjoyed it because in Dallas, I know more people in Dallas than I do in any other market because I used to live there for 10 years. So it was a good place to kick that idea off.
They should do like a 5-city tour with DJ Paradise.
Yeah, well, it's I specifically named it episode 1, so alluding to the fact that it might happen. Other cities. Yeah.
Is this the video I saw where you're talking to, and it kind of reminded me of a scary movie like from the 90s, but you're talking to a video camera on a tri-stand on a desk, and then it cuts to someone like upstairs, like Maddie peeking around the corner. And it's like,
we just did that the other night. I
kept expecting the phone to ring and be like, I'm in the house, you know, just like that, it was like this weird creepy little
like scream.
Yeah
it was. So the video, where is the video? It's on my Instagram page, Dave Paradise. And basically, I was just
that was a plug subtle, if you weren't paying attention.
Matthias,
I have like 10,000 followers, and, you know, it's whatever.
Matthias and I became roommates recently. We moved from Chicago to Austin, and we decided to go in our place.
So Matthias is our Hendrix ambassador.
I was about to say, is that the guy with the ponytail?
No, that's Trevor. He's our Reka ambassador.
Yeah. Okay. Both great guys. Yeah. Very
I've heard a lot of great things about Trevor.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
like he's universally loved,
hasn't?
Right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. You can't not love him.
Matthias too, and he can hear me downstairs. I'm doing this video, just me and the camera, like having a bit of fun with it. But I was doing this video to promote this DJ mix that I just posted, and I can hear him creeping upstairs. And I know what he's doing, but I don't care. And he's creeping down. He's over the banister, and he's just getting a little side angle of me doing this video, just me and my camera. That was quite funny.
It was
we added that.
It was a very good edit, yeah. And you could tell that. Based off just the first few seconds where you're talking to the camera, that it wasn't planned, but it seemed funny enough that you just threw it in.
I was just in hysterics at myself. I was like, this is just so ridiculous, but I'm going to do it anyway. Danielle, we need to get Danielle on and whatnot.
To do a podcast?
A video.
But you're not based in Dallas anymore, right? So
no, I'm in Austin now.
Okay. For some reason, I thought...
Dallas, Chicago, now Austin.
Okay. The Chicago thing is what I thought you were back up there.
Yeah, no, 3 years there. I loved it. Amazing city. But
too cold?
I wanted to come back to Texas.
Dallas and Austin, aren't they pretty similar weather-wise?
No, yeah. Chicago's too cold.
Oh, yeah. Chicago's definitely too cold. Let me get more of that Fire and Kane. We've already covered everything, right?
We have, yeah. Well, we didn't cover the IP at 12, but I think you're familiar.
I'm very familiar. Yep. I definitely want a piece of that Fire and Kane again.
So a lot of people ask me when we first launched this, they're like, is that a cinnamon scotch? I was like, what?
Yeah.
And then I didn't put two together. I was like, fire.
Did you tell them cinnamon. To leave you alone? You say the other way around.
Yeah, I mean, Fire and Kane was... they tried a few different names for this particular release, and supposedly some of them were not allowed by TTB.
Really?
Some of them were already taken.
What'd you call it? Adolf? Like, what's the name? What's a name that's not allowed by the TTB?
I don't know. Like, for example... you've got to be very careful when you put rum cask finish on a whiskey.
Oh, sure. Okay, yeah.
So
yeah.
That the rum isn't bigger than the whiskey part of it.
Right.
So that it doesn't appear to be misleading. Like the IPA one was an interesting one because if you buy this bottle in the US, it says India Pale Ale casks. They had to actually spell it out. Everywhere else in the world that you buy this, it says IPA in massive three, you know, the acronym.
Sure.
And this is the madness of
the TTB.
The laws, yeah.
Did you see the new proposed regulations? Mm-mm. So they're adding quite a few more in regards to brandy, more label clarification, actually defining out what barrel strength means. Because I don't know if you know, but barrel strength has no defined term. And in fact, I had someone on the show. Oh, Sagamore Spirit Rye out of Baltimore, Maryland, were here last week, and they had mentioned that they have a barrel strength rye, and it's actually fantastic. Like, we're huge fans of the cask strength rye, but it's called cask strength, and they actually, he's like, yeah, we add a little water to it. So it's a completely undefined term, although it would seem pretty straightforward. And the TTB is doing a whole slew of things in regards to brandy yeah, brandy, whiskey, the whole thing. And the differentiation in spelling between whiskey and whiskey. So all of our regulations are spelled the way that you guys spell, the way Scotland spells whiskey. But obviously we spell it differently for our bourbon, but they're actually defining that now as interchangeable. But anyways.
Yeah, put it in parentheses. Simple.
The E.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, so you you go nonstop when you're in market here, right? I mean, you just basically, what are you doing after this?
I've got, Cheryl has actually set up a bar crawl for us tonight. So.
Weren't you on one last night?
Yeah.
Yeah, but,
Tornado.
You know, I'm just trying to see out the year here.
Yeah. You're about to have a month it's, off.
I'm actually about to leave for pretty much a month.
For what?
Well deserved.
Just a vacation? Just a yeah, break? Drink a lot of water?
Definitely.
Drink a lot of water.
Definitely need it. Yeah, no, our jobs, we all enjoy it, but it's harder than it seems.
Yeah. Well, just being on the road nonstop. Every time I have Stuart Buchanan in from Glendronic, he seems like he just wants a pillow. Can we do the first two segments laying down and then we'll
call it pillow talk.
But he said he's gone like something like, I mean, a ridiculous amount of time where he only has a couple months and he covers the world. He covers Asia. He covers Africa. Mm. Well, I don't remember him saying Africa, but I know for sure he covers Asia and he'll go back and forth. I'm like, God, how do you not? And it's those tough. Flights are garbage. I mean, they're like 18-hour flights.
It's tough. I mean, I think I enjoy the travel aspect of it, but I don't have to travel more than say 3 hours on a flight,
sure,
versus doing the global. Yeah, I mean, we'll randomly go to New York and California,
yeah,
here and there, but I'm typically covering the central part. But yeah, doing the global role, it must be difficult. Time zones and, you know, extremely long flights.
Not only are you dealing with lack of sleep, but now you're dealing with massive time zone changes, you know.
Yeah.
But you get to see the world, so it's ups and downs, right?
I don't know, like everything else. You're always on.
Well, it's not for everyone, obviously. And we've actually not had the easiest time trying to fill these roles. So there's a role coming up in the company soon for a whiskey ambassador role. There's other roles for
which section of the nation?
Central.
Central? Oh, is that what you're getting at?
It's not my role.
Oh, okay. I thought you were about to announce that you're leaving.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. It's like, there's actually a position
exclusive
coming up.
I'm out. I've had enough.
Drop the mic.
A bachelor's degree preferred, DJ experience required.
Suggested.
Choice of tracksuit, questionable.
Please submit photos of your high top shoes.
Your case wins.
Let's define what a high top is first. yeah, so we have a hard time filling those roles because
they're very
people
demanding.
Love the idea of it, and then when they really get down to it and they realize that how long you are gone away from home, it's very difficult. So a lot of people are just, they love the idea, but
it's not good long term.
It's a tough one.
And you've been doing this.
Yeah, how long have you been doing
this? I'll be 7 years in February. But I was pouring Glenfiddich and Balvenie part time for a couple of years before that. So, I mean, this is 9 years I've been talking about Glenfiddich.
Sure.
First whiskey brand I ever worked for, first job I ever had in the industry outside of, you know, working in a kitchen,
yeah,
you know, years ago. Actually, I'll tell you a funny story about me working in a kitchen. I could have poisoned someone, so thankfully I didn't. At least I don't think
don't
I did.
Don't eat the muffins.
But,
yeah, please don't let this be Exhibit A in some post-mortem case or something.
I blagged my way into a job working in a kitchen. this was when I lived in England. I was probably 19 years old, and I blagged my way into this job that I had no business having. I was the head chef. I was the head cook in a restaurant that did like 20 covers for dinner, right? But the woman comes in after I've been there for about 2 weeks, and she's not happy. And she opens the fridge and she says, come and see this. And, you know, the stacking order of meats and different
sure
things. And it was just all over the place. She's like, you don't know what you're doing, do you?
Yeah.
I was like, nah, not really.
Yeah. She fired you?
Yeah.
It's so funny.
She did fire me, yeah.
How much time left do we have? This is the third or fourth? Okay, so we got one more segment after
Let's
this.
Let's go quick.
If it always flies by, and there's about 10 different things you said I want to go back to, because this is a side of you I haven't really seen, you know, of being fired as the poisoning side. when you said, just for clarification, when you say stacking order, you mean like oldest meat goes on is the most?
Well, red meat would be on the deck.
Okay.
Or on the lower part of the fridge because it potentially could drip blood,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And so there's just this, you know, whole stacking etiquette or safety in certain, you know, restaurants or certain kitchens, should I say.
Sure.
And I did not adhere to that.
Yeah.
Where'd you put it?
Just blood everywhere.
It was just like there might have been prawns down below and beef up top. I don't know. Didn't know what I was doing. 19 years old.
For those who don't
know. You were 18?
19.
Mean shrimp.
I was just trying to make some money.
So, I'm trying to go back to...
I've had some horrible jobs, by the way. Really terrible jobs.
This one's pretty fun.
Yeah.
I mean, you get to... I work in aviation, and it gives me a lot of computer time, which allows me to do my other hobbies, like a radio podcast. And
you haven't slept.
And I haven't slept. I worked mids last night, or night shift last night. So not all the pistons are firing, but you said that a job was coming up. I wanted to ask you specifically, and we've talked about this recently with spring. No. How does someone get into the industry? This question has come up a lot. People have asked, you know, like, how do you meet these people? I was like, well, actually, it all started because I just hounded these people on night shift trying to find their emails and like who I need to talk to. And then I just begged them to come to my event. You don't start out knowing anybody until you know people.
Right.
So I know that there are some job websites specifically for industry folks, but if someone wanted to get into the industry that didn't know someone who knew someone, what would be the way to go about doing that?
I would say the number one thing would be probably BevForce. Just applying. That's kind of what you're alluding to. There's like websites that are specifically just in
BevForce, BEV for those curious.
Com. Yeah. And it tells you what do you want to do, sales, marketing, all that. And then you can kind of apply. It's like a LinkedIn just for our industry.
Sure, sure.
So that's a really good resource. I think.
Cheers.
Oof. Yeah.
I think everyone kind of has a different background coming into this business. Like for me, I worked at the distributor and then for a marketing company. And now I work for William Grant. You almost killed people at a restaurant, and then we
almost,
hired you.
Almost. For me, Facebook is largely family and whiskey, and oftentimes mitigating the issues that rise from 4,500 member group. Whiskey is like a big part of my Facebook experience. When he first started jumping in and being like on Facebook every day, and you fall prey to politics, and
it comes up.
Yeah, so at the cigar lounge we go to, we've had both left and right guys get together for bottle shares, and there was never a single issue, never a single problem. Guys would get together. This guy voted for Hillary. This guy, there was even a regular that's a lobbyist at in D.C. that would come to these events, and never a problem. Yeah. Everyone understood each other in person, and on Facebook, it became this political thing. It was around the time that Trump started running, you know, like Gene became like a big focus on the, but he's since kind of reeled back on that a little bit. And I think that's kind of like it's like when you first start drinking whiskey, you try everything. Then you kind of move up in proof. Then you get those, we've talked about this too, proof. I don't want to say proof whores, but the people who love,
sure.
The people who only drink sherry bombs at cash strength. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that.
Yep.
And then they eventually moved back to, you know, normal stuff. And I caught Gene in that one time. But I'm rambling a bit. But the point is that I think it's a scale or a stepping process. You get into Facebook, you get into politics, you get rid of politics. Sometimes you get rid of your Facebook. Then you go through stages. And but Gene's a phenomenal guy. I keep trying to get him on, but he's also one of those guys.
Interesting episode.
It would be an incredible episode.
Yeah.
He's he owns a pressure washing company, and they do everything at night.
Oh.
So when you come and you see a Chick-fil-A parking lot looking gorgeous, it's because they did it at 3 a.m. So
I'm going to drop my car off at Chick-fil-A one night. get a little freshen up.
So Gene's a great guy. But anyways, we've got like what, 10 minutes?
About 5 minutes.
About 5 minutes left. What would be... We didn't even cover the 12, which is like the classic 12.
You know, I thought it would be a good idea to have the 12-year-old here. It is definitely our most well-known. It represents about 85% of our business.
Wow.
For the brand.
Let's not ignore the fact that it's a 12-year-old single malt.
And it's 12 years old, yeah. And let's not ignore the fact that it has never disappeared. It stayed. These are no age statement whiskies, these three. That gives the team a bit more flexibility to create different products, different price points, using different parts of our stock model. The 12-year-old has never been taken away. So we have the age statements all the time.
Yeah, 12, 14, 15, 18 still there.
Yeah.
21, that rum finishes. Dude, that was the most memorable event I've been to with you. Even forget the social. You brought did a deconstruction of the 21. Was just incredible.
That was like 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So was that moment.
We did. We tasted the 21-year-old at cask strength, which was 21 years old before it goes into rum cask.
Sure.
So bourbon cask aged. We tasted the rum that we used to season the casks.
Yeah.
Which was also cask strength. And then we tasted the final product.
Yeah.
Which was like.
And it was awesome. And we paired it with Alec Bradley cigars, and it was a good time.
Alec Bradley cigars. Alec Bradley in the house. Alan Rubin is a good friend. I'm sure he'll be watching at some point.
Well, it depends. I'm not friends with him on Facebook yet. We'll see.
Yeah,
I'll send it to him.
We'll connect you up. But yeah, let's go back to where it all started. 12-year-old is a combination of bourbon cask and sherry cask. This was traditionally what Glenfiddich was built on. 12, 15, 18-year-olds. All very similar in how they're produced in terms of the maturation. So you've got 85% roughly of this is bourbon cask, 12-year-old. And about the last 15% is 12-year-old sherry casks. Oh, Rosso sherry is what we're using. A little bit drier.
I didn't.
Did I not pour myself one? That's really terrible.
I didn't know it was.
I'm needing a nap, I think. But yeah.
We keep Stuart's pillow behind the the wall here.
This is a great dram. A lot of people overlook it because it's so obvious and it's so, you know, available. People want to go for the slightly more rare stuff, but this is still the best-selling single malt in the world for good reason.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a good dram. Really, my preference is a tiny splash of water, especially in this one. It just kind of gives it a little bit more of that sweetness.
Take your word for it.
Cheers.
Oh, cheers, absolutely.
Guys. I must tap again.
You know, that's that college instinct that's the ingrained in your DNA. Yeah,
I never know when to do it, when not to do it.
I don't do it usually with stemware because I don't think about it, and my pinky's already out. But with Glencairns or with a rocks glass, and I, without even thinking about rocks it, it's always cheers, tap, and then
eye contact and go.
So yeah, this is something that's been around since about. The 1960s, early 1960s was when we really started selling Glenfiddich or exporting it outside of Scotland. And it was a no age statement to begin with. Then it became an 8-year-old. And then later on, we upped it to 12 years.
We grew up.
The second year at the social we had, I found some old vintage bottles of online. I had to buy at auction, get them over there.
They're good.
Bring them in, and they had the all reflective labeling in the tube, so it was like this all shiny, you know. But the old bottles were fun, and it's always great to kind of taste what it used to be, you know, compared to what it is now, and it's fantastic. I mean, 12 years, you can't really go wrong. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, $30, $35.
Closer to 40, but just depends.
Just
depends where you're shopping.
Sure.
They actually still have all at the bottling facility at the Glenfiddich Distillery. They actually have all the past bottles, and it's crazy to see how much really has changed.
The archive.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be a package refresh next year, I believe.
Oh, really? For all of them? The core range?
It'll take a bit of time to get through the whole range, but...
18 included, even though they just did that repackaging?
Well, it will be, eventually. I believe it'll be possibly 12 and 15 first. Yeah. But yes, they're busy over there, the global team. They're always up to something, and they're doing some amazing work. Glenfiddich has just been turned around in the last, I would say, 7 or 8 years. in terms of what the distillery offers and the perception of the brand and the offerings. Remember, Snow Phoenix was 2010.
Oh, God.
Was the
so
first.
Many people ask me if they can get a bottle of Snow Phoenix.
Yeah, it's the most requested Glenfiddich I've ever known. And it was a limited edition in 2010.
The Jesse Wood story about Snow Phoenix.
Oh, man.
Convinced his wife to buy two cases. And now it's like.
He's
good man, Jesse. Well done.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah.
Isn't, I mean, tell the story behind that. That it can't
the
come
Snow
back,
Phoenix?
Right? Yeah.
It was a special edition created out of a mini disaster.
okay.
It's a little bit strong. There was some roofs collapsed under the snowfall, and some of the casks were exposed to snow for a few days, and some genius came up with the idea. Said, this is an opportunity. We should call this the Snow Phoenix. So it came together fairly quickly. The whiskies were, it was an amalgamation, a marriage of different casks from different ages, and it was bottled at 47.8, I believe. It was non-chill filtered. So this was kind of like the kickstart for a lot of the limited editions that would come from the distillery after that. But that was back in 2010. And now we've just got, you know, we've got more bottles. Like at one point, the sales team were saying, oh, all the innovation's coming through Balvenie. We need more innovation with Glenfiddich. And now they're like, stop,
too much. Yeah.
So you can't win. It's hard to strike a balance. But
you guys, I mean, you could recreate that. You could simply build a warehouse with a roof out of
and
Legos that has like a load-bearing weight of like 100 pounds of snow, and then it'll eventually cave in. And I mean, it was very well received. I know. And it's probably a hell of expensive. Yeah. So
I think we've seen enough disasters recently in whiskey distilleries.
Yeah.
We've got a barrel dropping from Bardstown this weekend because of it was the week after 1792 collapse, and it was the warehouse right next to it. So it's an easy sales pitch. We'll see how that goes. But
how many barrels does that put you at?
Oh, the group. We picked 30 this year. We've picked
this year.
This year, 2018. The group has picked 30, and like 10 of them have dropped. We're still waiting on Dox's rum barrel.
That's gonna be
it's gonna be awesome. Teeling Irish whiskey barrels. We do. I wanted to see 20 this year, and we picked 30 this year. So, and our last one sold out in under an hour. So,
pretty good.
Speaking of Dox, I owe Dox a troll.
Yeah.
He's been trolling me on Facebook recently.
No, that's just the timer. I mean, it's still going, right? We should probably wrap it up, is your whole point. But Dox is King Troll.
He's awesome.
And I turned his little olive thing into a GIF, and I'm going to be using it every possible turn.
He always gives me a hard time for drinking dirty martinis. He's like, do you know how gross it is? And I was like, no, and I don't want to know. Just don't tell me.
You should say, yeah, it is gross. That's why I don't use Citadel. Hey! Oh, all right. So thanks so much for coming on the show, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm so glad this finally happened.
Yeah,
and,
it's nice to be on this side.
Yeah,
usually I'm sitting back there. I'm like, oh, God, what are they saying?
Yeah. Well,
rein it in.
This one, for sure, we're going to have to clean some edits out. But thanks so much for coming, guys. Cheers. One last time.
Cheers. Now you have to drink
to this one.
All that.
Yeah.